of things. She's no more than a cog in a clock. And my enemies have lived on borrowed time long enough. With her death, I've left my intended message. But still I failed to achieve the whole of my purpose. The greatest enemy of my kind walks free, his reputation intact, without a hint of suspicion trailing in his wake. This knowledge enrages me. The thieving wretch does not deserve to slither about unscathed. To occupy positions of power and influence after all the things his family has done to mine. I could kill him, break his neck, bleed him dry. It would be simple, deserved. After all, he is the reason I walk this world bereft of light. Because of him, I lost everything. My very humanity, even. I could do it. I could bring about his demise. But his death at my hands would incur a war and ruination to those around me, would deepen the rift between the fallen and the brotherhood, between my family and his. First, I wish to see him suffer. I wish to see them all meet their maker and be sent to the fiery pit where they belong. I pray you not judge me too harshly for this. I know these kinds of petty considerations are unbecoming of an immortal such as myself. But there is a thin line between justice and vengeance. That line is the edge of a blade. One day, I will plunge it into his soul. The girl, however, did intrigue me. Not the one with the mild-mannered expression and the heart-shaped face. I know there are those who are drawn to people like her. They seek tranquility, a place to rest their heads. I seek nothing of the sort. I have rested far too long. But that girl with the unflinching stare and the knowing expression. She possesses the look of someone who has met death on a field of battle and managed to live another day. I am intrigued by her. I am curious about the scars death left behind. I want to know who she is, what she's done, what role she will play in this tale of woe. My interest consumes me in a dangerous way, for demons like me are predisposed to obsession, and I do not have the time for any distractions. Once, years ago, my sister in the night lost herself chasing after an unremarkable human, trying to find answers to questions she should have known better than to ask. I could not save her. The light of the moon betrayed me that evening. My heart still bears the wounds years later. I should know better than to be consumed by curiosity. I should not care what this enchanting creature thinks, what she does, or what she feels. And yet, I must care. No matter how fragile she is, how delicately her life hangs in the balance, she is a tool to be used and discarded. A hammer intended for a very specific nail. She will be the one in the end. The one who sends my enemy deep into the pits of hell where he belongs. I can see it, as true as I can sense the moon at my shoulder, high at its peak, its light as much a source of comfort as it is a source of pain. My enemy is just as enthralled as I, even more so because he desires her in actuality, not simply as a pawn in a grander scheme. The thought fills me with delight. Perhaps I have finally found something of his with which to toy, something to make him squirm. To take from him for everything he and his kind have taken from me. For never was a story of more woe. Soon he will know what it feels like to be unmade. A silhouette in a dream.
T'es un élément, Céline Rousseau.
You're a tease, Céline Rousseau. Rivers, rivers, rivers of blood. The smell of warm copper and salt. The gentle swirl of her thoughts as her focus escaped her, as she began slowly drowning in her own mind. This was the way the dream always started.
Te supplie pour mon baiser, n'est-ce pas?
You've been begging for me. Haven't you? His harsh whisper beside her ear. The feeling of his clammy hand against her skin, his palm slicked with sweat. The sickening twist of her stomach. He had been the younger brother of one of the atelier's best clients. A wealthy wastrel used to having whatever and whomever he wanted. Accustomed to spending his father's money, as though he alone had earned every franc. He'd stared at Céline for the last 3 months, a greedy light in his gaze. It had unnerved her, then, but she'd known better than to anger him by drawing attention to it. Weeks later, she still recalled how his hands did not seem like the hands of a gentleman, for they were calloused and worn. In truth, nothing about him. Despite his breeding and his wealth, indicated he was a gentleman. His hands were roughened by horseback riding. Indeed, he was one of the finest riders in his elite circle of friends. With these hands, he'd offered to soothe her, offered to bring her something warm to drink, asked if he could keep her company. Céline had not known what to do when he'd come to the door of the atelier long after dusk. His fine cloak about his shoulders, and his breath reeking of wine. She'd asked him to return home, but he'd been insistent, barreling into the workshop as though he owned it. In her dream, Céline observed the scene from above, as though the conscious part of her had separated from her body in sleep. She witnessed the events unfold with punishing slowness. Watched herself make mistake after mistake, as though God himself wished to teach her a lesson. A dull thud sounded in her ears. Her striped chambray dress tore from her shoulder when the young man tried to stop her from fleeing. Everything after that was a haze. Celine counted herself lucky that he'd barely managed to take hold of her skirts before her fingers had flailed about, scrabbling for anything with which to defend herself. The candelabra had not been a choice. It had been the best weapon she could grasp. Celine often wondered, in moments to herself, if she'd meant to kill him. Surely she could have struck him using less force. Surely she did not have to aim for the side of his head. Surely she could have prevented his death. But no. In the darkest of her dreams, she'd known the truth. In Celine, evil had found the perfect vessel. She'd meant to destroy the young man, as surely as he had meant to destroy her. While she'd watched the blood seep from his body, she'd searched her soul for a drop of regret, a hint of remorse. She'd found none. She'd clutched the candelabra tighter, prepared the lie to tell her father, knowing she could not stay where she was. Once more, a muted thud vibrated in her skull. Who would believe Celine had been the victim? After all, she was not the one lying cold and motionless on the atelier floor. The dream version of herself stared at the growing circle of crimson, stepped back so it would not stain the hem of her skirts. And then, something new and curious began to take shape in the blood pooling about her feet. Usually Celine was barefoot in this memory, her toes sliding across the cold marble, trying to avoid any contact with the boy she had killed. Tonight, a symbol formed beside her toes, the same symbol she had seen earlier, smeared in the wood next to Annabelle's body. Something soft brushed across the tip of Celine's nose. She looked up. A flutter of golden yellow petals cascaded around her, settling into the widening pool of blood, turning into hundreds of embroidered handkerchiefs the instant they touched the marble floor. Then, the lunar goddess dragged her chariot across Celine's dream. The thudding in her ears grew louder, more insistent. Everything dissolved in a sea of black. Celine woke with a start. Though her room was dark, all was not still. The thuds were sharper now, no longer muffled, a clatter of wood against stone. She flinched as a cool mist dampened her skin. The shutters outside her window had blown open. A storm raged beyond them, sending sheets of rain sideways, driving water into her tiny room until everything it touched felt alive. Celine stood, almost slipped as her bare feet slid across the wet stone floor. She took the few short steps to the window of her cell, then sighed. "Mad," she cursed to no one. It couldn't be helped. If she was to secure the latch once more, she would have to lean forward and be drenched. Celine considered wrapping herself in a shawl. It would be appropriate to do so. Her night shift was fashioned of thin cotton. If rain soaked through the garment, it would be inappropriate for her to stand beside the window and risk being seen. Her expression hardened when she realized her shawl was nowhere within reach. The wind continued beating at her shutters, the rain gusting through her room. Propriety be damned. Celine battled a particularly harsh gale, then reached over the windowsill to grasp the wooden latch. Signs of motion caught her eye. She froze, though the rain continued bearing down on her, soaking through her hair, seeping through to her skin. Celine blinked back the drops. It looked as though a figure hovered in her periphery, positioned beside a pillar near the gate of the convent's wrought iron fence. She blinked again. The silhouette vanished. Celine's heart crashed through her chest, the blood thinning in her veins. She yanked the shutters closed, latching them together in a seamless motion. Then she reached for a length of thick cotton. The blood continued pounding in her body as she stripped off her nightshirt and pulled a clean chemise from her meager chest of clothing. One thing was certain. Something had shifted tonight. Ever since that evening in the atelier nearly 6 weeks ago, when evil had taken refuge in her bones, Celine had felt torn. Certainly between right and wrong, but more than that. Between who she was and who she thought she should be. Celine Rousseau was a girl who believed in justice. That young man had meant to rape her, to destroy her body and soul. Was it wrong for her to destroy him instead? She knew the right answer, the one the Bible taught, because Celine was also a girl raised on the Ten Commandments, and it was wrong to kill. But were there ever times it could be right? Could Celine Rousseau be a girl who valued life as well as a girl who had taken it from someone without a shred of remorse? It was like walking the edge of a cliff. If Celine fell to one side, she would be good evermore. If she fell to the other, she would be consumed by evil and lose all chance at redemption. Celine knew it sounded silly, but to her it felt true. It wasn't possible for good and evil to reside in the same person, was it? Celine blinked hard into the damp darkness. After the events of this evening, she shouldn't be concerning herself with such things. She should be trembling in her nightdress, poisoned by a different kind of worry. Tomorrow, despite her best efforts, Celine's world could crumble like a castle made of sand. In the afternoon, Detective Grimaldi would come to the convent to finish questioning them. It had been his favor to the Mother Superior, a woman well acquainted with his family. Celine had watched in quiet shock as the elderly matron had advocated for her and for Pippa, begged the young detective's forbearance.
Miss Rousseau and Miss Montrose are fine, upstanding young women, she had said. They will be more than happy to cooperate. Of course they will answer any questions you pose to them, but please grant them this night to mourn the loss of their friend, to reflect on the actions that brought about this unfortunate turn of events.
Celine had looked away when she heard those words, her shame a dagger through her heart. Not a trace of guilt could be found on the Mother Superior's face. But the wizened woman had spared Celine, offered her a pardon on the steps of the gallows. Tomorrow, Michael Grimaldi would renew his inquiries. What if the detective looked into Celine's past with his eerie, colorless eyes? What if he asked why she had journeyed across the Atlantic? What if he learned she was a murderess? It could be her undoing. Celine's hands shook as she wrapped the length of thick cotton around her hair, trying in vain to wring the waist-length strands dry. Her dreams taunted her. Her memories failed her. Her desires had become reapers in the dark. She struggled to marshal her emotions. If she did not take control of her life, of these fears, they would be sure to control her. She could not allow this to happen. Succumbing to fear was the surest way to lose her footing. Celine made her way back to her narrow rope bed, determined to fight for a measure of peace so that she could prepare for what tomorrow might bring. When she reached for the coarse linen sheets at the foot of her mattress, she froze in her tracks. The golden petals, the embroidered handkerchiefs. She blinked once, twice. The length of thick cotton wrapped around her hair unraveled to the stone floor at her feet. Her body trembled. Bastien had tucked away a folded piece of fabric in his trouser pocket. In the warm glow of the gas lanterns, it had looked like a buttery silk handkerchief. in the bright light of day, it would be yellow, like the ribbon missing from Annabelle's hair. A surprise visit. Celine's dreams continued haunting her well into the waking hours. For the rest of the night, her sleep came in fits and starts. Amid the disquiet, she imagined she saw the silhouette outside her window draw closer, a splash of black in a sea of gray. As a child, these kinds of indistinct dreams came to her in waves, often in times of turmoil. In them, everything seemed vivid and alive and possible, even her most twisted nightmares. Twice, she imagined, her mother had visited her in the dead of night. Once, she had been cloaked in lambent fox fur, her eyes aflame. The following occasion, she had been accompanied by the briny scent of the ocean, a pearl glowing between her teeth. Tonight, Celine dreamed her mother whispered in her ear. She felt her draw near, the scent of safflower oil and incense thick about her. "Ka," she said, her breath a cool wash on the shell of Celine's ear. "Bali." Celine shouldn't know what these words meant, but her body froze, her eyes wide. "Flee." Her breath came in a gasp. "Quickly." As luck would have it, the next morning brought with it the clearest sky Celine had beheld since coming to New Orleans 2 weeks prior. As a result, the sun's rays seeped, unfiltered, into every nook and cranny. By 10 o'clock, the temperature had become sweltering. On top of that, one of Celine's worst fears had come to pass. She was stationed at the front of a classroom, gazing down at 12 smiling young faces, the eldest no more than 10. To her right stood Catherine, her hands folded before her, the bespectacled epitome of a genteel young woman. Celine was expected to assist Catherine in teaching the young girls about proper comportment in society, in addition to instructing them on correct French pronunciation. "S'il vous plaît, merci beaucoup, je vous en prie, pardonnez-moi," and the like. She supposed this was all a carefully orchestrated attempt on the part of the Mother Superior to shame her, to remind Celine of her place in life and in the world. "Ladies," Catherine clapped, "pay attention to Mademoiselle Rousseau. She's here to teach you exactly what to do to impress, say, a handsome young gentleman sometime in the near future." She sent a kind smile Celine's way, but in its depths, Celine detected a stab of resentment. Of course, Catherine knew what had taken place last night. All the young women at the convent had been informed, the truth spreading like wildfire through underbrush. Unsurprisingly, one of their ranks had perished in horrifically violent fashion. Perhaps Celine should not fault Catherine for the condescension shaping her brow this morning. If Catherine had been linked to Annabelle's untimely death, Celine would surely be sending her a judgmental look as well. In an attempt to channel the confidence Celine lacked in this moment, she offered a toothsome smile to the roomful of waiting innocents. "Of course, it is lovely knowing what to say and do in society, but you should also pay attention simply for the sake of learning how to speak another language," she said in a heedless tone. "We wouldn't want to feel like everything we do is an attempt to catch a young man's notice, now would we?" She laughed softly. A handful of the young girls in the room giggled with Celine, though most of them squirmed in their seats, their faces pinched in confusion. Fury shaped each of Catherine's features before gathering above her brows. "Mademoiselle Rousseau, may I speak with you for a minute?" she ground out from between her teeth. Celine looked to the wooden beams along the ceiling, counting down from 10. She'd known it was a mistake for her to be teaching anyone anything, especially a classroom of children under the watchful gaze of a former English governess. jokes about Puritans and the Tower of Terror abounded in Celine's mind before she silenced them the following instant. "Celine," Catherine said even more softly, even more heatedly. She eyed the exit sidelong. Wincing all the while, Celine nodded. As she followed Catherine toward the door, a bell-like voice piped up from the back of the room.
"Mademoiselle Rousseau?"
asked a girl with cat eyes and a mop of unruly hair. Grateful to have evaded the impending lecture, Celine swiveled around.
"Yes."
The girl fiddled with a corner of her slate.
"Is it true you're from Paris?"
"Yes, it is."
Murmurs of admiration rippled through the space.
"Why ever did you leave?"
asked another girl near the front of the classroom. A stream of silent curses barreled from Celine's throat. Briefly, she considered repeating the foul word Bastion had used last night at their first encounter, simply to see how it would feel to shock everyone present with nothing but a single syllable.
Celine squeezed her eyes shut.
"Because I wanted an adventure." Another bright smile took shape on her face.
"What kind of adventure would you like to have?"
"I'd like to see the pyramids,"
the first girl replied. A girl with blonde pigtails tapped a finger against her chin.
"Maybe travel on a boat one day?" "I want to try squid,"
still another called out from the right. Sounds of mirth mingled with their exaggerated disgust. Girlish laughter lilted into the plaster ceiling. Catherine eyed Celine suspiciously, but returned to her judgmental corner without a word. Once more, Celine was spared on the steps of the gallows. Less than an hour later, a knock resounded at the door. Catherine answered as if she had been waiting for it all along, her blue-gray skirts a soft swish against the polished stone floor. The young woman waiting on the other side inclined her head of mousy brown hair regretfully.
"Miss Rousseau," she said to Celine,
"apologies for disturbing your class, but there is a gentleman waiting for you and Miss Montrose in the lemon grove leading to the vestibule."
Celine steeled her nerves while following the bonneted girl outside. On a bench, near a row of carefully tended tomato vines, sat Pippa in a lavender day dress, her gaze hollow, dark shadows looming beneath her eyes. Like Celine, it was obvious she had not slept well. When Pippa saw they had come to collect her, she offered them the smallest of smiles. The sight of it soothed Celine, though it troubled her that Pippa had been placed, once more, in a precarious situation. If only Pippa hadn't volunteered to accompany Celine last night. If only Celine hadn't been so insistent. If only the Mother Superior hadn't sent Annabelle to spy on them. If only. Celine's heartbeat thundered in her chest as she prepared to face the young police detective in earnest, to give the performance of her life. When they rounded the final bend, their escort leaving them to their fates, Celine was shocked to discover it was not Detective Michael Grimaldi waiting beneath the canopy of citrus-scented leaves. It was Arjun. He stood in the shade of a lemon tree, a navy bowler hat in hand, his monocle perched atop his right eye. He appeared engrossed in conversation with the gardener, a hunched gentleman whose tanned and wrinkled skin had aged him beyond his years, giving him the appearance of a wizard, replete with a long, wispy beard. The gardener offered Arjun a cutting of some sort, its vibrant green stem and tiny fronds wrapped in a length of dampened linen. Bending from the waist, Arjun reached to touch the top of the gardener's foot, as if in gratitude. Then he took the cutting before turning to Celine and Pippa and offering them the most disingenuous of smiles. Not to be outdone, Celine responded in kind.
"Forgive me," she began, "but I'm somewhat confused. Might I inquire as to..."
"It's coriander," Arjun interrupted, "an herb often used in East Indian cuisine. I missed its scent, and William generously offered me a cutting for my garden. Celine blinked twice.
That was kind of him.
And not at all the question you meant to ask. Arjun grinned. Bastion requested that I come here today. I advise him on legal matters, and he did not want you or Miss Montrose to be questioned by the police without someone advocating on your behalf.
Understanding settled on Celine. In addition to being Bastion's lackey, delivering blows to poor fools in rancid alleyways, Arjun was also the lawyer mentioned in passing last night. Bitter amusement warmed through Celine's body. She was not surprised to know Bastion kept among his closest acquaintances an attorney. Undoubtedly, at all hours of day and night.
Then, you're a barrister? Pippa asked, a breeze playing with the ends of the blonde curls framing her heart-shaped face.
Of a sort, Arjun replied without missing a beat. I know the law inside and out, even if I'm not permitted to practice it.
A quizzical expression passed across Pippa's features.
I don't understand.
More's the pity.
Another punishing grin took shape on his face.
My skin is not the right color, Miss Montrose, nor is my parentage. Surely you, of all people, understand that.
Excuse me?
She blinked, consternation clouding her gaze.
Based on your accent, I'd wager you're from Yorkshire. A proper English girl, through and through.
Color flooded Pippa's cheeks.
Yes, I'm from Yorkshire.
Then you're no doubt well aware that a scrapper from East India would never be permitted to work as a barrister in any circle of significance.
Tucking his bowler hat beneath his arm, Arjun stored the coriander cutting inside the breast pocket of his gray frock coat.
That's by design, in case you didn't know.
He laughed to himself.
Not all of us believe in such notions, Pippa said softly.
Well, that may be true, he said. But all of you definitely benefit from it.
Pippa paled as she struggled to respond. Knowing full well this conversation was not going in her friend's favor, Celine interjected with a small curtsy.
Thank you very much for going to such trouble on our behalf, monsieur.
She waited for Arjun to offer his surname.
Desai.
He looked away from Pippa and cleared his throat.
But please feel free to call me Arjun, as I do think we're past those kinds of formalities.
His hazel eyes twinkled.
I appreciate you coming here today to advocate on our behalf, but I'm afraid we lack the means to pay you.
Celine fought the urge to squirm under his steady gaze.
And I would not want to take advantage of your valuable time.
He snorted.
It appears we both dislike being indebted to others. And though my time is indeed valuable, you needn't concern yourself with payment. Bastion will handle all the expenses.
The sheer arrogance of both men. Celine's gaze narrowed. Pippa glanced at her sidelong, wearing a look of supreme unease.
And why would they do that? Celine pressed.
Arjun tilted his head from side to side, considering.
I couldn't speculate as to his reasons. A wise young woman once told me we are only privy to our own faults.
A half-grin curled up his face as he reminded Celine of her words from last night. Celine could feel her lips starting to pout. She kept quiet, letting her eyes answer for her.
Bravo, Miss Rousseau, Arjun commented. I'd advise you to maintain that indignation throughout the course of today's inquiry.
He took a step closer to Pippa, narrowing the gap between them in one fell swoop.
Keep silent, unless you are absolutely certain the next words you speak are beyond reproach. Make the quiet your friend. Bask in it.
It was Celine's turn to snort.
Simple enough. You're merely asking us to behave as the ladies we've been raised to be.
I'd wager that to be an easier task for some than for others.
Celine bit her tongue, refusing to let him incite her. Pippa frowned. There's no need for you to make such slights, sir, she said. It's unbecoming of you.
The truth is often unbecoming. But that does not make it unwarranted.
In your opinion? Pippa raised her elfin chin, prepared to do battle.
Celine did not want Pippa to fall prey to Arjun's provocations, so she decided it was best to change the subject.
You still haven't answered my earlier question, Monsieur Desailles. Why would Monsieur Saint-Germain take on the expense of providing us with legal representation?
I told you last night, Miss Rousseau, he replied. Bastien is merely doing what he does best. Don't see it as anything else. He would have done as much for anyone in need of assistance, as he's done for countless other young ladies in the city.
How magnanimous of him, Celine countered in a cool tone. A smile ghosted across Arjun's lips.
Trust that he is most concerned with putting a swift end to anything that might negatively affect his family's businesses.
Well, Celine sniffed, her indignation mounting. It bothered her immensely that Bastien had taken it upon himself to make decisions for them without even consulting them first. Not to mention that, if her suspicions were correct, if Bastien did indeed have something to do with Annabelle's untimely death, as the yellow ribbon in his pocket suggested, he was, in essence, pouring drinks for them from a poisoned well. Moreover, Celine hated the idea of owing him anything. She could refuse, but that would be foolish and prideful. The benefit of having a legal mind present for the events to come should outweigh her concerns for what the far future might bring.
Arjun dusted the brim of his bowler hat. I believe the detective is waiting for us inside the Mother Superior's office, he said. If you would care to take advantage of the boon being offered you, please lead the way. But if you'd rather be damned fools, I'll bid you both good day.
Celine bristled further. At least she would not be guilty of selfishness or arrogance in this instance.
Pippa, she said, turning toward her friend, what do you think we should do?
Pippa glanced from Arjun to Celine and back again, her expression thoughtful.
Even though we have nothing to hide, I do think it would be better to have a barrister with us, don't you?
I agree. Celine nodded. We thank you for your assistance in this matter, Monsieur Desailles. Please convey our appreciation to your employer.
For I certainly won't, Celine finished in her head. Dark amusement glimmered in Arjun's gaze.
Shall we?
He said to Pippa and Celine, indicating they should lead the way inside. Neither of them dared to step forward. Arjun's thick brows tufted together as he turned toward Pippa.
Don't worry yourself too much, Miss Montrose, he said softly. You have nothing to hide. To quote Lancelot, the truth will out.
Pippa nodded. Then she proceeded through the lemon grove, her posture rigid, her chin held high. Steeling herself, Celine inhaled deeply before following her friend, hoping against hope that Shakespeare, in this instance, would be proved utterly wrong. Her truth must remain in darkness, no matter the cost. The performance of her life. In the light of day, Detective Michael Grimaldi did not seem quite as intimidating as he had the night before. Nor did he appear quite so professorial. He almost looked handsome. Unfortunately, this shift in countenance did little to ease the tension building in Celine's body. She adjusted her seat on the creaky wooden chair positioned before the Mother Superior's desk. Then she smoothed the overskirt on the drabbest dress she owned. The color of dirty dishwater. This particular gown had been relegated to the time Celine had fiddled with fabric dyes in the atelier. Her ears still burned from how Detective Grimaldi had coolly rebuked her for using feminine wiles to sway him to her side. Today, Her attire had been chosen to make the point that Celine cared not a whit whether the sneering, self-important young detective found her attractive. The most beautiful young woman he's ever met, my foot, Celine seethed to herself. Then she heaved a great sigh. Her temper could not get the better of her today, as it nearly had last night. From the opposite side of the Mother Superior's desk, Michael Grimaldi observed her in studious silence, before considering Pippa, who was seated between Celine and Arjun. Celine's palms turned clammy when Detective Grimaldi leveled an icy look at Arjun, who crossed an ankle over a knee, before removing a small leather notebook and laying it on the desk alongside a graphite pencil. The immense wooden cross on the wall before Celine seemed to loom larger with each passing moment. Jesus himself appeared to lock his tortured gaze on hers and say, "I suffered like this for your salvation?" Celine looked away. It was important she keep her wits about her, that she not lose sight of Arjun's earlier directive. If she remained demure and silent, then perhaps Michael Grimaldi would leave them all alone. But if worse came to worst, Celine knew of a way to turn his attentions elsewhere. The location of a missing yellow hair ribbon, to be specific. Detective Grimaldi cleared his throat.
"Thank you for agreeing to meet with me, Miss Rousseau and Miss Montrose," he intoned.
"Of course," Pippa murmured.
"We wish to help in any way."
Celine canted her head, cut her gaze, refrained from sharing her thoughts, though she was certain her expression spoke volumes. To Pippa's left, Arjun grinned, then produced a slender blade to begin sharpening the point of his graphite pencil. The snick, snick, snick of metal against wood was as comforting as it was infuriating.
"Were you able to rest at all, Miss Rousseau?"
Detective Grimaldi asked Celine directly.
She inhaled through her nose. "It's kind of you to ask after me, Detective Grimaldi. I slept as well as can be expected."
Placing his tweed fore and aft cap on the desk, the detective leaned back in his wooden chair.
"Then I suppose you did not sleep well at all."
"I'm not certain how to respond to that, sir."
"Are you making an indirect inquiry as to whether I slept as a guilty person would?" "If so, you must know. It won't work."
The snick of the knife against the pencil ceased mid-stroke. Michael Grimaldi arched a brow.
"You share your thoughts quite candidly, Miss Rousseau."
Celine considered baring her teeth in a fierce smile. The cursed wretch was deliberately trying to provoke her again. She smoothed her skirt, locking her attention on a faint green stain along its hem.
"I suppose you'd prefer if I kept my thoughts to myself."
"No, I appreciate your candor. I hope you continue sharing it with me."
In response, Celine said nothing. Utterly unruffled, Detective Grimaldi turned to Pippa.
"A good night's rest is something I value highly. As the first of 5 children, it was a luxury we could ill afford when I was a boy. How many siblings do you have, Miss Montrose?"
Pippa startled at his question.
"How do you know I have siblings?"
"A simple deduction. The inner sleeve of your dress is worn through. The color is no longer fashionable, though it was made for a young woman not too long ago, suggesting it didn't belong to your mother."
He peered at her intently.
"Stands to reason. You're not an only child."
Outrage caught in Celine's throat the instant Pippa's face flushed crimson. Celine opened her mouth to rebuke the detective, but caught herself, looking to Arjun for guidance. Their attorney finished sharpening his pencil. He rested his monocle atop his right eye and cracked open his small leather-bound notebook. Without a word, he started writing in it, the scratch of graphite to paper, the whole of his contribution to their inquiry.
"Infuriating man," Celine thought.
"The dress was given to me by my cousin," Pippa replied, her voice clear.
guileless. And I'm also the eldest in my family.
Of how many?
Detective Grimaldi asked, as if they were sipping afternoon tea at Claridge's.
3.
I have a brother and a sister. He considered her for a moment.
You must have been an excellent role model for them. Undoubtedly far better than I.
Pippa looked away, swallowed.
I did my best, Detective Grimaldi.
You don't feel comfortable being candid in my presence, Miss Montrose?
A furrow marred his forehead. It was unexpected of him to accuse Pippa of being disingenuous.
I am being forthcoming, Pippa said.
Would it help if I told you I don't harbor any suspicions toward you, Miss Montrose?
Pippa took a careful breath.
It would help. Most definitely.
She bit her lower lip.
But that must mean you don't have suspicions about Celine either, since we were together the whole time.
Arjun glanced up from his notebook. The detective inclined his head, his colorless eyes unblinking. Are you quite certain you were in Miss Russo's presence for the entirety of the evening?
Celine's heart thrashed about her chest like a caged bird.
He had trapped Pippa in a lie so easily.
Pippa paled. She glanced at Arjun, who continued scribbling in his notebook, offering her not a single word of advice.
There was a brief time in which I left her side, but it could not have been for more than 15 minutes, she finished in a hurry.
During that time, Detective Grimaldi looked to Celine. Did you interact with anyone else, Miss Rousseau?
Celine didn't even bother glancing toward Arjun for cues. It was clear Detective Grimaldi already knew the answers to the questions he was asking. He was trying to trip them, to muddy the waters. To what end, Celine could only hazard a guess.
I believe you know that answer already, Celine said primly.
Nevertheless, he waited for her response. With a small sigh, she continued.
During that time, I shared a brief conversation with the owner of the establishment.
Mr. Saint-Germain.
Celine nodded.
And was he present throughout the entirety of your visit to Jacques?
Awareness flared through Celine hot and fast.
Detective Grimaldi was after Bastion, not them.
She should have realized it earlier based on their mutual enmity from last night. Relief flooded through her like cool water on a parched day. Her mind whirled as it considered whether to disclose her observations about the yellow ribbon. But every word she spoke needed to be above reproach. And she lacked incontrovertible proof.
No, Celine replied carefully. He was not.
Arjun stopped writing, his pencil stilling above his notebook for an instant. Then he grinned to himself before resuming his scribblings. But that breath of time had revealed his hand. The truth of why the erstwhile attorney was here at all sharpened into sudden focus. He wasn't here to help them. He'd come to protect Bastion, to make sure his employer was not implicated in anything untoward. These blackguards had inserted themselves into Pippa and Celine's unfortunate situation to safeguard their own interests, proving they cared not a whit about anyone else. Even though Arjun had said as much to Celine, her anger rose in a sudden spike. The revelation about the yellow ribbon threatened to burst from her lips in a spate of uncontrolled fury. Lack of proof be damned.
Is something wrong, Miss Russo?
Detective Grimaldi asked.
Curse him for being so observant.
Celine cleared her thoughts with a toss of her dark curls.
Apart from the fact that I'm being questioned by the police, I can think of nothing that might be wrong.
I meant that you seemed piqued all of a sudden, as though something of note had captured your interest.
I only came to a troubling realization, that's all.
May I inquire after it?
Pointedly, Celine slid her gaze to Arjun.
He met her glare, then leaned back in his seat, the wood beneath him creaking at the shift in weight. The corners of his hazel eyes narrowed, his monocle glimmering as if in warning. "It is with respect to Monsieur Saint-Germain," Celine said. Michael Grimaldi did not move a muscle, his stillness belying his interest.
"Though I only saw it for a moment," Celine began, "the image of Annabelle in death will forever be seared into my mind. And I wanted to be certain you'd caught every detail."
The detective nodded.
Arjun tapped the end of his pencil against the black leather of his notebook, a serene smile upon his face, though he kept his attention locked on Celine. Wordlessly, she dared him to stop her.
"A pallid skin," Celine continued. "Her eyes frozen open in terror."
Beside her, Pippa shuddered.
"Her unbound hair across her face."
She watched to see if Arjun had any reaction. Save for the continued tapping of his pencil against his notebook, he was devoid of all emotion.
"And," Celine paused, "that horrible, jagged wound?"
The detective waited.
"A kind of wound that would have produced a great deal of blood, no doubt," Celine said. "It would be all but impossible for anyone present last night, including Monsieur Saint-Germain, to have committed such a heinous crime, then drain their victim of blood and remove all traces from their person in time."
Detective Grimaldi steepled his hands before him. He stared at Celine, thoughtfully. She could not tell if he was impressed or irritated.
"I came to a similar realization myself, Miss Rousseau," he said. "But precautions can be taken. Stained clothes can be changed. Coats and gloves can be doffed just as easily as they are donned."
He bent over his joined hands.
"To that end, did either you or Miss Montrose encounter anything you might deem suspicious?"
Bastien had discarded his frock coat. Numerous members of Le Coeur de Lion had carried weapons on their persons. Knives, guns, ice picks, even rings that could double as instruments of torture and violence. Suddenly, the small red stain on the collar of Odette's shirt did not seem quite so innocuous.
Odette, a murderess. Celine almost laughed to herself. Then her blood ran cold. Celine was a murderess.
Anyone was capable of committing ghastly deeds.
And everyone in the Court of the Lions appeared to possess otherworldly gifts. Some could taste the flavor of deceit, could make chess pieces move about, bidden by the mind, could foretell the future with naught but a touch. Arjun himself had stilled a man into a stupor simply by grabbing his wrist. Celine looked about, fear seeping into her soul. All these individuals were beyond the ordinary, their abilities extending far past parlor room tricks. But to what extent? Again, she recalled what the two young women had revealed earlier in the square, about the court likely being responsible for the decapitated girl along the docks. The court. La Cour des Lions. Celine did not believe in coincidences. And only a fool would provoke creatures with untold appetites and unknown abilities. If Celine wished to keep herself safe, to keep Pippa safe, she needed to bend with the wind, no matter the bitter taste it would leave on her tongue. Suddenly she understood why the other officers of the New Orleans Metropolitan Police had granted Bastien such a wide berth.
Cognez au nid de guêpe, et vous serez piqué.
Strike a wasp's nest, and you will be stung. Celine smoothed her apron overskirt. She met the detective's penetrating stare, refusing to flinch.
"I'm sorry to say I saw nothing of note, Detective Grimaldi.
Disappointment flashed across his face. He looked to Pippa. Surreptitiously, Celine reached under the table for Pippa's hand, squeezed it tightly.
I'm sorry, Detective Grimaldi, Pippa said in a clear voice. But I didn't see anything either.
It's a shame my clients couldn't be of more help to you, Detective Grimaldi, Arjun said, as he held open the door of the Mother Superior's office. To his credit, he did not look the least bit smug. Nevertheless, a hollow kind of rage spiraled through Celine's stomach.
It is indeed a great shame, Detective Grimaldi replied coolly.
He moved back to let Pippa pass, then waited just beyond the oaken door. When Celine crossed the stone threshold into the cavernous corridor, the young detective shifted his tweed hat to his other hand to walk alongside her. He'd been waiting for Celine, perhaps for another chance to take her off guard. Before Detective Grimaldi could continue probing any further, Celine decided to wrest control of the situation and catch him unawares first. The quickest solution would be to needle the detective as he'd needled her.
It appears you know Monsieur Saint-Germain well, Celine said, expecting this to provoke him, based on the charged exchange between the two young men the evening prior.
Michael Grimaldi surprised her. He did not seem perturbed in the slightest by her inquiry.
Yes, we were schoolmates as children. The best of friends.
He offered this with a knowing expression, as though he were interested to see how this news affected her. Celine frowned.
Friends? Then why are you...
I thought I was supposed to be the one with the questions.
Celine bit down on the inside of her cheek while they walked.
My apologies for asking, she said,
though she did not feel sorry at all. The suggestion of a smile touched his lips.
It might be odd for me to say this, but you would have made quite a detective yourself, Miss Rousseau.
Celine snorted dismissively. While they followed Pippa and Arjun down the corridor toward the double doors leading outside, she recalled what Arjun had said earlier this afternoon about being the wrong kind of person in the wrong kind of skin.
Even you must be aware that those of the fairer sex could never strive for such a lofty position, Detective Grimaldi.
Alas, you are not wrong.
The detective paused in contemplation.
Did you know the New Orleans Metropolitan Police is one of the only police forces in our country to allow men of color to serve in its ranks?
I did not. Another spark of surprise warmed through Celine.
It's a rather recent development. Most likely a twisted experiment of sorts.
He sighed to himself.
But as the grandchild of a slave, I suppose it is a thing for which I should be grateful.
A few steps ahead of them, Pippa and Arjun neared the massive double doors, Arjun reaching for a wooden handle to tug it open. He paused to glance Celine's way, and the ribbon of widening light to his left caused his eyes to flash silver for an instant, as though he were a predator crouched in the shadows. Inhuman. Unnerved by the recurring thought, Celine returned her attention to Michael Grimaldi, taking a moment to peruse his features.
When we first met, I thought you were Italian.
Are you not? I am.
The detective placed his hat beneath his arm and grasped hold of the other handle.
My father's family hails from Sicily, but my mother's family is of mixed blood, as are many long-time residents of New Orleans. Beyond the Garden District, that is.
Detective Grimaldi moved aside to let Celine pass into the sunlight.
I see, Celine said slowly.
Having the choice to conceal the truth of her own blended heritage meant she had been spared this kind of cruel judgment.
It shouldn't be revolutionary to think one's skin color should have no bearing on one's place in society.
The detective held open the door while Celine emerged into the blinding brightness of the afternoon sun.
I agree, he said. You may not be aware of this, but New Orleans society, indeed society throughout the South, bases much of its notions on the one-drop rule.
He followed in her footsteps.
If you possess a drop of African blood, you're granted little in the way of consideration.
Celine pondered this, her vision straining to adjust to the harsh white light. She squinted up at him. It's the land of the free and idea only, then. A smirk took shape on his face.
My father's family were humble cobblers in Palermo. They often struggled to put two sticks together to start a fire. A chance for a better life brought them to the Crescent City 50 years ago.
He raised his right hand to shield his gaze from the sun.
What brought you to the shores of the New World, Miss Rousseau? The Mother Superior told me you arrived by ship less than a fortnight ago.
Celine gripped the worn fabric of her skirts. The same thing that brought your family here, Detective Grimaldi. She grinned into the light, her expression fierce. Opportunity. The detective shifted, placing Celine in shadow, sheltering her from the worst of the sun's glare.
You're very good, he whispered.
Pardon?
You're very good at hiding how smart you are.
And you're very bad at trying to be charming. His lips twitched.
You don't find me charming?
You're still interrogating me, Detective Grimaldi. Would you find yourself charming in this instance? He swiped a large hand through his wavy hair.
Point taken. And please, he said, call me Michael.
I don't know that that's appropriate.
I find such beliefs tedious. It's appropriate if we decide it can be.
If only life were so simple. If only we all were smart enough to shun tedium as you do. His colorless eyes, so light a shade of blue as to appear almost white, shone oddly for an instant. Almost as if he were amused. Nearby, Pippa coughed as if to clear her throat, and Celine pivoted toward her. Arjun and Pippa waited just outside the iron gate, their expressions incongruous. Pippa looked alert and studious, her eyes wide, but not in a disapproving way. In contrast, Arjun appeared unconcerned with the happenings around him, save for the sharp light still glinting in his gaze. If Celine had to guess, the young lawyer looked cross. An idea took shape in her mind. A simple way to impress upon Arjun and his employer that she would do as she pleased, despite their attempts to interfere. Celine offered her right hand to Michael. Have a good day, Detective Grimaldi. Please see that you do not return here anytime soon. She sent him a teasing smile. He offered her an awkward, almost forced grin, then took her hand to press his lips to it. They were warm and soft. Despite intending to assert the advantage, Celine felt her cheeks start to redden.
Do I make you uncomfortable?
He asked without warning. Not at all.
His fingers tightened around hers. You're lying.
What? Celine blinked in dismay. Was she that bad at it?
It's of little consequence to me if you are. You see, the heart.
Michael lifted her wrist, where Celine's pulse pounded in her veins.
Doesn't lie.
Without a word, she extricated her fingers, her cursed face inflaming further with every passing moment. Then she pivoted on a heel, intent on fleeing to the safety of the convent at once.
May I offer you a word of caution?
Michael asked, just as she began retracing her steps. Celine turned back, waiting expectantly, knowing full well that Arjun was listening to their exchange, all with the intention of informing his employer.
It is with respect to Bastion, Michael said loudly, placing his tweed hat before him as if it were a shield.
Celine said nothing in response, struggling to regain her composure.
When we were children, we called him the Ghost, because everyone around him seemed to perish without explanation, leaving behind nothing but specters,
Michael began.
First his elder sister, Emily, then his mother, Finally, his father. He paused. It didn't end there. When he turned 16, his uncle bribed a spot for him at West Point. Then one of Bastion's roommates was killed in a ballroom fight. Bastion attacked another boy, blaming him for his friend's death. He beat the boy within an inch of his life. Not long after that, he was asked to leave the military academy in disgrace.
I think I understand what you mean, Celine said. Thank you for the information, she said, in a cold tone, while Arjun bristled beyond the tines of wrought iron.
Bastion destroys everything he touches,
Michael continued in a strident tone.
Unless it's something as soulless as money. With money, he is in